God, here we are. Sometimes we come ready, sometimes we come willingly, sometimes we're not sure why we're here. My prayer is that you would open our hearts, open our eyes this morning to the reality of your presence, to the truth of your being here. And I pray that you would create and stir a hunger within us to be able to receive from you all you've got for us this morning. In Jesus' name, amen. So last week, I just want to pick up on something Tim left us with last week. He was talking about the idea of creation, and then how we sometimes sort of latch on to the story from Genesis 3 of fall, and let that be sort of our founding identity, right? This is where we begin. And he's like, actually, wait, it goes back. There's two chapters before, right? Don't start in the middle. Don't start with Frodo throwing the ring into the fire, right? Like, it starts before that, right? There's a precursor. And the precursor is created in the image and very good. And there's something beautiful about that, and something refreshing about that, and something amazing about that. The reading for this week in the church calendar for Lent, or unless I read the church calendar wrong, which I'm prone to do, is from 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And it talks about the work of God in making us a new creation. And there's something about that that I think resonates with what Tim was talking about original creation, because God isn't just content to sort of tweak a little bit here and there. He wants to reinvent and bring us back to that original good. And so, we're going to get in on that. Sometimes when I talk, I talk. Sometimes when I talk, I facilitate conversation. And I think this morning is going to be more of a facilitating conversation with us. So I hope that you're at least, with the time change and all, ready to participate this morning. There's probably going to be some space for some either, I'm not sure what it is going to be yet, we'll figure that out as we get there, but it's going to be like group prayer time, like in small communities, or interaction around specific issues, and then sharing that back with the large community. So we'll see that when we get there. Figure that out. So let me read for us the text that is allotted for the Sunday of Lent. And what I love about it. So here we go. So if anyone is in Christ, there is a new creation. Everything old has passed away. See, everything has become new. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. That is, in Christ, God was reconciling the world to himself, not counting their trespasses against them, and entrusting the message of reconciliation to us, so that we are ambassadors for Christ, since God is making his appeal through us. We entreat you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. For our sake, he made him who to be sin who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. And what I love about this passage, one of the things that I love about Lent, and I talked about it a little bit, and I talked about more the negative aspect of it last week, and then Tim berated me in the service for it. But the idea that Lent is a giving up, right? It's an emptying. It's a taking away from. And there's loss in Lent. And we read about that in this passage, right? There's this idea of loss in this passage. That God gave up for us his own son. That he reconciled us to himself by not counting our trespasses against us. There was a giving up of that. There was an emptying of ourselves, of himself for that. Philippians 2, it describes it in this beautiful epic poetry about Jesus. And it talks about him taking on the form of a servant, emptying himself, not claiming his equality with God as something to be used for his own advantage. And there's something about the way that Jesus goes about it that is a self-denial. It's a letting go of, a laying down of. And what I love about Lent is that for me, it's a way to embrace that. It's a way for me to live that out. But that's not where it ends. And that's not where this passage ends with it either. It talks about picking up a new something. Diving into a new something. So earlier this maybe it was last week or the week before, Zoe was asking me, right? Because she and I both were junk food like freaks, right? And for Lent, I've given up junk food, right? So she's like, hey, Dad, you want to go buy a donut? And I'm like, oh, I would love to, Zoe, but I can't. And she's like, well, why not? I said, oh, because for Lent, I'm not eating junk food. And she says, oh, well, why are you not eating junk food? I said, well, it's a way of sort of giving up for God and doing something like that. And every time that I want junk food, or I want to participate in this thing that I'm giving up, I try and take that time and think about God or talk to God. She said, oh, that's interesting. And so then she just went on and did her thing, right? But that's for me what Lent is. It's not just the giving up. It's the taking on. And so hopefully we see in this passage Right? It wasn't just a laying down for the sake of laying down. It was a laying down for the sake of taking up something. And what I love, this is the bit that I love the most. So all this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. That is, in Christ, God was reconciling the world to himself, not counting their trespasses against them. We get that part, right? This is the work that God has done. And we think that that's where it ends, right? God has done it, and it's awesome. He has forgiven. He has not counted sins against. He's reconciled the world to himself. But Paul, the writer of this letter, lumps in something else that is key. And he says, and entrusting the ministry of reconciliation to us, the message of reconciliation to us. And so it doesn't just end with the work God has done. In fact, that's where it begins. And kind of like Tim talked about last week in terms of creation, God creates the world, sets it up in this generative process where it's going to self-generate, but he doesn't stop there. He sets it up so that it will do that, and then it will carry on. And he's not, you know, setting it in motion and backing away. Obviously, from this passage, he's right in it. He throws himself into the mix of it. But he wants us to take up a significant role. And that is the part that we get to play. And what does it mean for us as recipients of this new creationness to take that up and to live that out? So one of the things that I want us to do as smaller communities is talk about, maybe we'll just do it as a large community. I want to hear from you guys areas of reconciliation that are needed or that you've seen in your own life. It can be personal, it can be sort of citywide, it can be nationwide, it can be global. What are areas that we need to see reconciliation? This is pretty significant. I mean, this is if this is what Christ came for, right? To reconcile the world to himself. And I think as part of that, it's the world to each other, to itself, so that creation can then be remade, made new, and made whole, and made good. Because right now it's broken, right? It's hurt. And I experience it, I feel it, I know it. I'm sure you do too. God's not satisfied with that. I mean, he's here and he's involved in it. He's not distant from it, but he wants it healed. He wants it whole. And so he's entrusted us with this task. So from you guys, what are areas of reconciliation, spaces that we need to see healing, things like that, personally, individually, you know, corporately? Shut them up. Yeah, that's substantial. Yeah. I was reading a book and it was talking about, this is a guy writing, I don't know if you've seen the movie, Machine Gun Preacher with Gerard Butler, but it's the book by the guy that the movie was based on, and he was just, he shows up at a UN meeting to talk about some of the issues going on in southern Sudan and the challenges he's got this orphanage set up to take these, you know, kids that are, their parents have been killed right in front of their eyes, and some of them have even been forced to kill their parents, this child soldier thing going on. And he shows up at this UN meeting to talk about issues in Africa. And he just gets pissed off because all the big heads are just talking about oil. The whole conversation ends up being about oil. And then he's just like just agitated, angry. It's all these presidents of places and, you know, American this and Canadian that and UN this. And they're all talking oil. And he's just sitting there fuming. Because he's got this orphanage. He's got 500 kids he's rescued. And he knows there's thousands more out there that are dying, that are just being used, and he's just sitting there, he's like, what the heck? And so finally he's given the platform to talk. And he does, and he says, I'm just frustrated that we're here talking about oil when there are, you know, like lives at stake. Like and you know, for the most part, the American people just kind of got ticked off, like, who's this white guy? What's he doing here representing something else? And they get all frustrated, right? But there is a massive disparity in terms of who gets cared for. There's issues of reconciliation there. I mean, I live in the nation and probably consume more than most in the world, right? We're in the nation where 80% is, they throw out statistics, right? Where the, I don't know, 90% of all statistics made up anyway. But, you know, most of this, you know, like more than half of the world's resources are consumed here by people like me. And what about people that don't have? How do we reconcile this disparity? Yeah, great, good. Other areas that we need to see reconciliation. want to see reconciliation.
I feel like I'm at the age and station in life where marriage is a theme on that one, because love, young, fresh love in our church, and it's good to see, but 15, 16 years in, it seems like for me, all my friends are getting divorced, all
sure.
my friends are
yeah.
on the rocks, and you know, it's been such a loud theme, so for me, that's kind of a very long haul of marriage kind of thing. That's yeah. a need for reconciliation.
For sure it is. I hear it in that joke. Yeah, it's not that our love is not young and fresh. It's old and stale? No, I don't know. But sometimes, you know, like, yeah, marriage is work. And not just marriage. I think relationship, long-term relationship with anybody, friend, family, you know, the idea of romantic love commitment like that. But man, community is hard work. Staying invested in when people around you are falling apart or when you are falling apart. Some people have the tendency, when they're falling apart, run and hide. And maybe there's space for that, but how then do you get healing? How then does community make space for you? What if you're, you know, 50 or 60 and divorced or never been married? Is there space for you, right? I mean, I've got friends and they get pissed off at church. Because in general, church values married people more than unmarried people. They found that, right? There's all these, you know, they do talks at churches and they do these massive, we're going to do a 6-week series on marriage. Well, what about the people that aren't married? What do they do for that 6 weeks? They get frustrated, right? They get like, you know, there's all these, you know, singles and mingles groups going on at churches, right? And man, I've got single friends that get aggravated to no end. It seems like the church is here to hook people up. Well, why can't we let people be who they are? Why can't we celebrate people as individuals and then also encourage community in healthy ways? So, yeah, issues of reconciliation there. Being treated as a second-class citizen because you're not married. Yeah, I've got friends that are aggravated by that. One of my friends, he was engaged and working at camp, and his fiancée was there as well. And he strongly, and there was another couple there, they had been married a very short time, but they were both serving at camp too. And he just couldn't believe the expectations that were placed on him as a single person that wasn't married and how it differed from this other couple, right? Him and his fiancée, he said there was almost no space given for them to be able to actually be able to hang out or talk or plan wedding or cultivate anything. But the married couple, free evenings all the time. And it was like, well, what's the disparity here, right? Because I'm single, I have to work more for Jesus. Because I'm married, I can have lots of free time. Like, he was angry, and so his camp experience wasn't good. But, yeah, disparity in the church and everywhere, I think, in terms of relationship and individuality. And, I mean, sexuality, I think, is a huge area for healing and reconciliation in our culture, right? A culture which objectifies people, women mostly, but men are often objects of sexuality as well, and dehumanizes. In a lot of ways. How do we reconcile that? That's a work. Oh, man. Other areas you guys can think of.
I think on that same theme, something that's been on my mind a lot this week is this this Bill 18 or whatever, anti-bullying and whatever. I mean, I'm thinking of the bill, but this week in the newspaper, there was like a front page with this pastor from one of the mega churches in Steinbeck. You know, just kept throwing another grenade of hate against the gay community,
yeah.
and just once again making sure that they know that mainline Christianity wants nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, it's, I mean, talk about needing for reconciliation there.
Yeah.
Similarly, I was going to say, like, the departure from the mandate of the early church, which was loving people, being the core motivation behind anything we did, and how far we've come from that.
Yeah. The way the church interacts with those that they feel don't belong, or those that they feel are sinful, or those that they judge as not right. Yeah, you've got a bad track record. And it can be really easy for, you know, a community like us to say, but that's them. That's not us. Well, when you're on the outside looking in, church is church, right? Like, we get lumped in with. And so I think, you know, I think back to Elisa's talk. Mike's here, the man. We love you, Mike. Keep it up. we know it's not a time delay. Don't worry. We know it's you didn't miss the clock. It's all good. We still love you, Mike. You're still awesome. The idea that that if it doesn't fit, if it's not right, then we have to tell them that it's not right. And I think back to Elisa's talk a couple weeks back. And, oh, my goodness. I mean, I had no idea that she carried that much weight as a speaker, but wow, that was unbelievable. Like, she just hammered us with, guys, love. Like, that's what we're here to do. Yeah, Seema.
I'm pretty new to the church community. I've always wondered, how come the other churches, the ones that are spreading the hate, why are they making the front page? Why are we not making the front page and supporting the community? Like, why can't our church get in touch with Rainbow Peace Works or something? And, you know, if they have community events, we should be there because we should show that other side. If they're really preaching, like, love and acceptance, then we need to be there to counteract that image.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that image isn't out there and we get lumped in with them because we're kind of quiet.
That's some good words, Seema. That's beautiful. Yeah, we shouldn't just let those churches make the papers. What about us? Why can't we get out there? I mean, I know the media is looking for stereotypical slants to be able to, you know, they want the stories, right? They want the buzz, and those churches are vocal enough often to get the buzz real easy. But why don't we get our voice out there? Why don't we show up at events and be like, no, we're here, and we're representing Jesus in a different way than you've seen Jesus represented. Not in an alienating way, trying to say, oh, those people are terrible, we're not like them, but in a way that actually represents Jesus. I mean, if we're called to carry this ministry of reconciliation, where did Jesus go? Right? I mean, yeah, he hung out with the religious folk. His talk with them was an invitation to grace and transformation. And he hung out with the broken folk, the people that were destitute, alienated, marginalized. And his invitation to them was grace and transformation. Right? It was the same message. Well received in one arena, not well received in another. Not at all. So how do we carry this message of grace and transformation? Yeah. Thanks, Seema. Others, areas of reconciliation, areas that we need to see, we want to see. We maybe aren't even, or we're scared to hope to see, scared to want to see transformation.
I work a few blocks from here, and in the jewelry industry, it's kind of a few blocks from here is considered not a nice area to be in. And it's just a lot of broken people. It's a broken neighborhood, and the help, people are trying to help, but just kind of in a little bit off on the right way. The organizations, the boards, that the residential neighborhoods don't seem to really get it. They have kind of different motives. So it's really unfortunate because I think the area can really be fixed up and people could help. And being in a business that deals with that 1% of the world, it's kind of a huge contrast. A lot of people wonder why we're even there, why we're dealing with this product when there's such brokenness around us. So it's kind of challenged me and my business partner to, you know, figure out what is our role to be socially responsible, corporately responsible. Yeah. How can we maybe change the neighborhood? Yeah. But on the flip side, do we stay or do we go, kind of thing? It's a really tough question, and it's hard to, if we go, how is that going to affect an already broken neighborhood?
Yeah.
It might make it a lot worse. It might have no effect. I mean, I don't want to toot my own horn here, but it's an interesting question. It's interesting. It's hard to deal with because we do deal with a product and with a customer that is nothing to do with that neighborhood at all. So that's just, you know, even with the Aboriginal people, that's always in the paper. We need to deal with that. We need to fix that. Not by throwing money at it. That's definitely not that's not how to do it.
Yeah, no, those are huge issues, right? I mean, economic disparity, and then you got your residential areas with issues, and then you got businesses that are in there, and they're trying to figure out, well, what's best for business? But is what's best for business actually the bottom line? Or do you want to think about social responsibility? That's huge, right? Those are massive issues. And that's one of the things I've loved about your, I think you're talking about independent, right? Just up the street. I love that they're still there. That's fantastic, right? I mean, a lot of, and one of the things I loved about Nick Hill, Kern Hill Furniture Co-op guy, right? He stayed on downtown Main Street until he died, I think, right? And then it relocated. I think it was his son that relocated, or close to the end of his life anyway. But man, that guy was in a dive place down there, a horrible area of town, but loved the community. Come on down, right? That guy was awesome. But anyway, how do we carry our businesses? How do we carry our business, you know, whether or not we're business owners or whether or not we're business consumers, in socially responsible ways? Huge issues. White flight, right? The idea that, oh, upper middle class, we're out of the core. Well, how do we not go out of the core? And not just gentrify the area and displace again, right? How do we actually, like, it's complicated and it's messy and it's not easy and it's, yeah, your customers are coming in and saying, what are you doing here? Like I don't like coming to this area because I'm afraid my car's going to get broken into, or I drive through this neighborhood really fast with my windows up all the time, or whatever, my doors are locked. Like, we've got fear, and we've got suspicion, and we've got paranoia, and how do we not let that run our lives? Yeah, big questions. Other areas of reconciliation. I mean, you were touching a little bit on some of the, like, Aboriginal issues. I mean, I think that's a significant one going on. Yeah, other areas you guys want to talk about, think about?
Well, I think there's huge reconciliation to go on in all sorts of Aboriginal relationships and areas that touches on. I've been taking several courses on cross-cultural education and kind of exploring more of not necessarily what has been done, but what has currently been going on in schools and how cross-cultural education is addressed in a way that is still so incredibly stratified. And I was watching a small, I don't know more, demonstration at the university this week, and I was standing, it was absolutely heartbreaking. I was standing on the steps of the education building where tomorrow's educators, tomorrow's socializers were walking out around me, and the things they were saying about that protest were just disgusting. And it felt like this, I wouldn't just jump on the I don't know more bandwagon and be part of it, because I don't necessarily agree with everything, but there's so much disparity between even understanding what is going on. And there are people with power who are completely ignorant and content to stay that way. Yeah. And there are people without who are trying to inform and just get some equality, and I feel like it's a slow process, and it's one of those things where it's almost a change that is too big to even hope for, so people don't try.
Yeah, it's huge.
And how long did it take for the Métis battle to finally won?
Yeah, 30 years in court, right? Métis land settlement, just settled, or moving towards settlement again, right? Like, yeah.
People that much, it's like you're seeing them for 1 minute if you're making $1 million. So just like even reconciliation for like doing the right thing and having like morality and seeing that person in front of you as a human being and not like a paycheck.
And one of the things that our church is big on is trying to get away from the idea of tiered service to God, right? Like, oh, if you're in paid ministry, then you're sort of more favored by God. And if you're just a regular Joe that works a regular job, then you give money to those because, you know, some of us get really dependent and needy to those that work for Jesus and don't make enough money. And you're less of a service to God, but you're still doing an important thing. No, I think, you know, when Sina's talking about areas of involvement and ways that we need to see reconciliation in every stratosphere of society. We need followers of Jesus in every area. Every area, right? Like essentially, not just there to make money and give it to the people that do God's work for real. No way. I mean, I've come out of that world. I used to do that, and I'm still doing God's work. I don't get paid for it anymore, but man, it is essential, whatever field you're in, whatever job you do, to carry this ministry of reconciliation. This is what we're called to. This is what Jesus was getting at when he was trying to affect every stratus of society. And the early church didn't have people leaving their jobs so they could come to full-time ministry. I mean, Jesus did that for a select few. Drop your nets and follow me. I mean, they still fish later on too, right? Maybe in bad ways or good ways. But, you know, Paul was, he had this little secondary business going on, making tents so he could support his thing. Like, I think the idea of vocational ministry can be a really scary one because it almost makes it professionalism to be a Christian. You know, I used to joke when I worked as a campus pastor that I was getting paid to be a Christian. I would joke about that. And I'm not getting paid anymore, but I'm still doing it. So I guess it was real. That's good. But being able to somehow think about new ways to engage that is essential. Ways that we as people who love God, people who are loved by God, have been impacted by this message of Christ reconciling. How do we carry that into every avenue of our lives? I'm going to read for us something from this book. It's called Becoming the Answer to Our Prayers. Shane Claiborne and Jonathan Wilson Hargrove. Tim, I know, quoted from a Wilson Hargrove book a while back. It was a book on finances. I think it was a good one. But let me read this. He just talks about some of the different prayers that are in Scripture and then kind of unpacks them. But so this is on the line from the prayer that Jesus teaches, the Lord's Prayer. Deliver us from the evil one. And he says this. And I think this is fitting as we think about, you know, we see injustice, we see, you know, it's like evil is present around us in every way, and we can see it affecting all sorts of stuff, right? And we want to see it change. So how do we go about it? So he says this, it's interesting that Jesus does not teach us to pray, end evil, or rid the world of evildoers, but deliver us from the evil one. We are not taught to pray to be kept from pain. Suffering is the inevitable plight of Christians who are disturbed by the discomfort of their neighbors. And Jesus knew all too well that the way of the cross is not the way of safety and comfort. For Jesus and nearly all his disciples, it meant horrific suffering and martyrdom. Jesus did not rid the world of evil, nor was he delivered from evil. Instead, Jesus was handed over to evil that he might deliver us. Evil seemed to triumph at the cross, but evil did not have the final word. God raised Jesus from the dead. And they call this Sunday of Lent Joy Sunday because it's like right in the middle, and so you've been doing the suffering and the dying and the giving up, and there's been lots of morose and somberness and reflections on the road to the cross. And this is the reminder halfway through that that's not where it ends, that there is resurrection. And this bit that I love, again, from 2 Corinthians 5, for our sake, he made him to be sin who knew no sin. And it doesn't end there, right? That's the giving up. That's the emptying. And here's the filling. So that in him, we might become the righteousness of God. And righteousness of God isn't just like God in his holiness and perfectness. No, the righteousness of God is God interacting and reconciling and reshaping our world. And we are called to live that out in our everyday. So what I want us to do is break into groups of three or four and just pray. Pray about some of the things that have come up, some of the things that have struck your heart. And I don't want us just, well, I'll talk to us about after we'll just pray. Because sometimes, you know, we think just praying is enough. And so becoming the answer to our own prayers. We'll get there. But so break into groups of that and pray, and then I'll come up and wrap us up and we'll get to the singing. So if you're scared of praying out loud, don't feel like you have to. This isn't pressure to do that. God hears silent prayers. He hears our vocal prayers. Sometimes I think our vocal prayers almost distract us from our silent prayers. So if you just want to be silent as you pray, that's fine too. Go ahead. Well, I'd like to just wrap up some thoughts and then move us into the singing. Hopefully this is stirred conversation. The idea wasn't that we resolve everything because, man, the ministry of reconciliation is an ongoing issue and it's with us as long as we're around, as long as humanity's around, because I am going to need reconciling my whole life. And so, yeah, this isn't a fix everything Sunday, that's for sure. One of the things I wanted to say about prayer is that it's dangerous. And one of the things, I had you guys pray for this, and before I really let you know the outcome of some of these prayers, prayer is a deadly thing. And I felt I could do this because Jesus did it. So, in Matthew chapter 9, Jesus is going about all the villages and teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and curing every disease and every sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, for they were like a sheep without a shepherd. They were harassed and helpless. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." And now we've inserted a chapter break there, but Matthew just wrote a letter, right? It's all just one thought going on. We've put a chapter break there. And then it says this: "Then Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to cure every disease and every sickness. And he sent them out." So he had them pray for laborers, and then he sent them out as the laborers. And so we've prayed for reconciliation. We've prayed for healing. Now we get to go out and do it. We get to go out and live it. We get to go out and be reconcilers in this world. And we get to be part of bringing about this new creation and paying it forward. I heard this one talk about Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 and the original Genesis mandate that we would go out and subdue the earth and whatever, and how we've taken that to sort of mean dominate. But this guy, unbelievable talk, and basically what he said was, God made the earth, and it was still a little bit chaotic, but he put a garden in it. And then he had Adam tend the garden. And when he said go out and subdue the earth, he meant go out and tend it and create more gardens. Go out and cultivate. Not subdue and dominate and use for your own, you know, forcefulness in your own way and manipulate and control and use for yourself. No. Go out and recreate what he has created. Rebuild and continue to build. Pay forward what he started. He set a garden in place. And he's done that work with Jesus, reconciling us, restoring us. And now he's saying, okay, now you go out and pay that forward. Live that out. Invite others in on it, right? Ah, what a joy. What a work we get to be part of, participating with God in the ongoing creation of our world. So spend your week diving into that, and I'm sure that more stories will come up. If you want to talk about this more, then catch me on a Sunday or send me an email or talk to each other about it, because this is what we're here for. This is what we're about. This is part of God reconciling the world to himself, is giving it to us. So how do we carry that? So go in and let's worship.